Department of Health Cancer Services Program.
The views expressed by volunteer on-air hosts do not represent or reflect the views of WGXC. WGXC is nonpartisan and does not endorse or support political candidates. To participate in WGXC's on-air dialogue, call 518-828-0290 or email info@wgxc.org.
This is Daniel.
Aubrey.
Sonia.
From Acre, New York. You are listening to WGXC Hands-On Radio for Greene and Columbia Counties.
Good morning, good morning. This is At Issue here on WGXC 90.7 FM. I'm Victor Mandolia, and I'm with...
Deborah Gilbert.
Oops, I don't think we have you there. Try again.
Deborah Gilbert.
There we are. And we are going to be discussing today a number of issues surrounding the town of Copaic, particularly around the property owned by one Sal Cassino. We have a pre-recorded interview that we did with Perry Teasdale, who is the publisher and founder of the Columbia Paper. That'll be followed by an interview with Victor Myers, who's the town attorney on this matter in the town of Copaic. And toward the end of the show, we're going to have a call in from Bob Sachs, who is a former board member of the town board in the town of Copaic. And he was very involved in a lot of this Sal Cassino stuff in the lead up. Bob no longer lives in the county, but is very knowledgeable on this issue. So we're going to have him phone in toward the end, about 10:45. So we're going to get right to the interview with Perry. But before we do, Deborah and I were talking a little bit this week about our friend Philip Grant, who is the DJ on the show preceding this, and Phil is always a huge ray of sunshine and just the most positive energy guy. It's always been a great pleasure to walk into the studio and have Philip be on before us, and we just wanted to give him a big shout out and say thank you for all the help and for being such a great positive ray of energy here at the station.
Yeah, he radiates warmth, and he has wonderful taste in tunes.
We love the funk. So this is At Issue. I'm Victor Mandolia. We're going to go right to the interview with Perry Teasdale. And after that, we'll be back live on with Victor Myers.
Our this segment of the piece is pre-recorded. We're doing this Friday, January 24th. And we are with Perry Teasdale, who is the publisher of the Columbia Paper.
And founder.
So maybe you could give us a little bit of background on the paper, and then we'll talk about the Sal Cassino case.
The paper was founded in February of 2009. And there were a group of people who were laid off from the... The paper was founded in 2009. It first started print in April of 2009. Actually, it had started in February as a news website after the closing of a paper called The Independent, which was a countywide newspaper, and its owners, corporate owners, closed it summarily at that time. And some of us decided that it was important to start a new community newspaper for the county, and we did. And by the second issue of our paper, we were back covering a story on Mr. Sal Cassino. And that's the topic of we're talking about today. And there's a little bit of news value because today is the day in county court, or actually state Supreme Court held here in the county, where the final written pleadings are going before Judge John Nichols about two contempt charges that are faced by Mr. Cassino. And they have to do with his behavior at a place that he owns. He calls Copaic Valley Farms, which is 300 acres in the town of Copaic.
Sounds lovely, Copaic Valley Farm.
It's a beautiful area, and the setting is absolutely idyllic. There's the Taconic Ridge that divides the New York and the Massachusetts border, and then there's a broad valley and the hamlet of Copake. And between the ridge, the Taconic Ridge, and the hamlet of Copake is this flat farm field area bisected by a small trout stream called the Nosterkill. And that's where Mr. Cassino owns his land. And what first came to my attention way back in the independent days when he was in some trouble with the state because he had built a bridge over the Nosterkill and had moved the Nosterkill and had redirected it slightly and built these kind of regular, almost flood control banks on the stream. And you're not supposed to do that without a permit. And it would be hard to get a permit to do something like that.
Almost like a berm or a seawall or something?
Yes, exactly. Uh-huh. So there he was building this. And he didn't, as far as I know, as I remember, and I may be remembering the specifics slightly incorrectly, but he didn't have the proper permits to do it, if he had any permits at all. And the other thing that was odd about this bridge was that it was very, very large, and it was built out of cement, and it was more like a highway bridge that you'd find on a state highway, mm-hmm. With even, I think it maybe even had guardrails on the side, but it wasn't a farm bridge. It wasn't kind of a cobbled together item, and it wasn't clear why he needed a bridge like that. Mm-hmm. But so what? Some people want to build a bridge. Maybe you run afoul of state folks, but Mr. Cassino had at that time a business called Bronx County Recycling. And what Bronx County Recycling did, and its successor company does, is handle construction and demolition debris. Building is knocked down, there's cement, there's wood, there are pieces of metal, there's stones and things like that. But the state regulates what you may and may not dump as unregulated C&D, which is what the construction demolition is called. And there are very strict limits. You can't throw in even carpet and odd items because other things get mixed in with it and have in the past. And Columbia County has an interesting history in that regard. There is a place called the Lamunion Dump in the town of Claremont. Mm-hmm. And back in the 1980s, there was a dumper. I don't know it had anything to do with Mr. Cassino. I have no reason to believe it did. But somebody was dumping what's called cocktailed waste. And cocktailed waste is when you have C&D that's legal to dump, but you mix in much more dangerous materials, mm-hmm. potentially hazardous materials, asbestos, industrial chemicals, those kinds of things.
That petroleum could be harmful. Products.
Petroleum products would be another one. And so the Lamunion dump back in the 80s was dumping, and we found out about it. I was at that time with the Woodstock paper, Woodstock Times. I was the editor there. And a reporter came to me and said, you know, there's an interesting guy from the state named Ward Stone, and he's doing some investigation for the Department of Environmental Conservation and has found some things basically on our doorstep, even though it's across the river. So we did some stories on it back then, but it kind of faded, and the state got involved, closed that Lamunion dump down.
And is this the same Ward Stone who now does historic restorations?
No.
Is that the same guy?
No, Ward Stone was the wildlife pathologist for the Department of Conservation.
Now,
and very controversial person, and ended his career somewhat, unfortunately, for all concerned, but is no longer with the state, but was very controversial in terms of pursuing various, I don't know what you'd call them,
environmental
crimes. Yeah, I think that's the best way to look at it.
Now, Lamunion had a $2.4 million judgment against him in 05, I read.
Right, yeah. Well, that was that. Then Mr. Cassino became involved later on in some dumping at Lamunion site, and he, which is unrelated to the Copake site, except that it's in the same county where Mr. Cassino has been dumping other things. Anyway, the long and the short of that was that was part of the history of Columbia County, and then years later it resurfaced where Mr. Cassino was accused of dumping, but the jury didn't convict him on that. In fact, found him not guilty, mm-hmm. on those charges. The odd thing about that case was that the lead investigator for the state was not allowed to testify in that case. And jurors were actually apparently curious about why that had happened. But with the evidence they had, they didn't convict him. They found him not guilty. But that's not what's happening in Kopeck. Kopeck is where Mr. Cassino has this property, this 300-acre property, and he has been dumping there for the better part of 16 years. And in the first half of last year, 2013, he brought in, I think it was 9,600 cubic yards of material that the state is aware of. And much of it, at least they don't know how much of it, was not permitted because it was contaminated with other materials. Whether it was asbestos or petroleum or chemicals, I don't even know. And sometimes it wouldn't even have to be that. If you looked at his property, especially in the spring when it was clearer, and now it's a little covered with a light bit of snow, and so it's not as clear, you can see the pieces of wood and the pieces of other materials, maybe wallboard, maybe other things, that protrude
sticking
from it.
Out,
and,
wow.
And what used to be a cornfield.
Right.
And he calls this, you know, dirt, but it isn't exactly that. Now, he had a judgment against him, last year or the year before, I guess 2012, in a settlement, and he had to divest himself of the company that he had in the Bronx. But the company still operates under a new name,
right,
called New York Recycling, and he's not connected to it by name in any way.
Now, just to be clear, this property is not zoned to be a dump, and it's not,
he said that he was in the composting business, and
right,
that he was therefore exempt because of state agricultural markets law because he was a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
But what he was farming was waste, some
right
of it hazardous.
And of course, the cost to dump this type of stuff in various dumps, particularly the hazardous stuff, is extremely high to dispose of properly.
So back in 1989, and when they were drawing up the rules in the 80s, under Andrew Cuomo's father as governor, they actually put in the law that there was a real incentive for places to take this material, because if you cocktailed it, they didn't, I'm not sure they used that term, but if you mixed it with other materials, it was a much cheaper way, just as you say, to dispose of it, because you'd say, well, wait a minute, you can dispose of this C&D waste because it's just stone and cement and stuff like that. It's not harmful, and you can put it in the ground because that's where it came from. Well, that's wonderful. That's not fine. But if you mix in these other things,
right,
then all of a sudden you have
the
real potential. And then you don't know what's happening to the water table. You don't know what's
right
happening. If one of the things that they found are traces of friable asbestos. Now, friable means it can become airborne. It can be inhaled. And that's the most dangerous type of asbestos as far as we know.
Mm-hmm.
If that's out there, lying in the fields, open fields, because you can't grow anything on these fields.
Right.
I mean, a little grass will grow, but basically you've got this field of waste out there. And he didn't have any authority to do it. And he kept building buildings, and he's still building buildings. Now, it's not
also without permits.
Also without permits, or with only partial permits, or building things that weren't allowed to be built. He started, there was a little shack there that was a, I don't know what it was used for, maybe some storage of hay or something, but it was a very small building, and now it's become this whole farm stand. He has no permit for a farm stand,
mm-hmm,
and that the State Department of Transportation, for instance, says, wait a minute, you want traffic to come in and out of your farm stand? You haven't applied for us to look at that and see whether or not that's a danger. He also has a road down past a house where, I don't know whether he lives in that house or somebody does, that is called Lackawanna Road, that goes perpendicular off Route 22, and right at that road, there's two large stone walls. I mean, they're about maybe 4 feet high, 5 feet high, and they're kind of retaining walls, but they're on the state right-of-way for a state highway. The state said, you have to take them down. He hasn't taken them down. The judge said, you have to take them down. Now, when you talk about contempt, the judge is saying, we have ordered you to remove the waste. We've ordered you to take down the walls. We've ordered you to take down the buildings. You've done none of it. And they said, oh, we've, and the casino and his lawyer said, oh, no, we've done that. And then the town says, no, you haven't done that. Here are the pictures. You haven't done that. This is taken today or yesterday, and we haven't done it. So the judge is saying, you're in contempt. Well, they appealed that contempt verdict. It went to an appellate court, which basically upheld most of it. There was some small revision in it and sent it back for adjudication. And that's what's being decided right now in the court, is what should happen to Mr. Cassino. And basically the appellate court has signed off on the fact that the judge can exercise his right. And that would be up to and including large fines every day, for instance, and a possible imprisonment until he's...
And has he ever been jailed for any of this?
Well, I don't know that he has ever been jailed for here. We don't know too much about Mr. Cassino. We know that he started his company at Bronx Recycling in 1997, but we don't know too much more
how
about
many
that.
Times
but
the corporate name has changed.
Well, I don't know whether it's changed at all, but we do know that there was a problem in Waterbury, Connecticut. And what we also know, there was a problem in Dutchess County. Before he started doing anything, or I think it was probably before, or at least concurrent with the beginning of what he was doing in Copaig, in Dover Plains, he was dumping, doing much the same thing, bringing up this stuff, and then the town of Dover was trying to stop him.
Did they have any luck? They
didn't have any luck. But strangely enough, they used lawyers from Columbia County. And those lawyers, frustrated by what they saw, proposed a new strategy to the town of Copaig. And they said, the strategy that we should use, at least as far as it seems to have played out, is we can't stop him from doing, because he doesn't. If somebody says, I'm not going to obey the law, unless you take them unless you can put them in prison for something, it's very difficult to do anything.
Well, and in this case, he's not really saying, I won't obey the law. He says, I did obey the law, and then just ignores the law.
And actually, strangely enough, along with that concept of it's not the crime, it's the cover-up, when he was convicted of a felony by the state, it was for falsifying records and submitting false reporting.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why he had to give up his company and pay a $25,000 fine because he had done, he had falsified the records.
Of course, a $25,000 fine in the scheme of this, which would cost millions to remediate the problem, it's just
and you figure if he's bringing up two truckloads a day, each with 118,000 pounds of waste, how much is that worth to the people who are want to get rid of that waste and don't want to pay for it to get rid of it in a responsible way? Well,
and I assume we're talking about the kind of trucks that have a dumpster in back.
Well, I don't think they're that. I think they're even larger. They look more like railroad gondola cars.
Mm.
If you've ever seen them, they're huge, huge vehicles. I mean, 118,000 pounds is a lot of waste.
Yeah.
No wonder he
needed a cement bridge.
Yeah, exactly. And then it all kind of begins to make sense. And when you look at this is the farm. When you look at it, you see equipment on the property, but the equipment you see is heavy construction equipment.
Right.
It's not. You don't see a John Deere tractor. He may have a John Deere tractor, as far as I know. I don't have any idea. But you see heavy construction equipment.
Like excavators.
Excavators and bulldozers and those kinds of things, which a farmer might use. I mean, certainly there are lots of reasons why a farmer would need those. But you don't need them in the quantity and the scale. That's not the regular. I mean, you don't plow a field with a bulldozer.
Right.
So these are very
few farmers can afford that kind of equipment.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, whether they can or can't, I mean, he might be able to be a gentleman farmer, and that's what instead of riding horses, he likes to ride bulldozers. I mean, you could find any number of excuses, but all you have to do is look at the land.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're seeing what's there.
You would think they would bury it a little better.
They don't even have to, because my assumption is, and I have no idea, that if anyone, let's not say Mr. Cassino, but let's just say anyone, wanted to get rid of this stuff, there may be a formula at which point, if you put only up to a certain amount of these toxic materials or hazardous materials into your mix, at 118,000 pounds, if you have a few pounds of this stuff, depending on how toxic it is, and you mix it up, the recipe is just right for not being able to be found. Now, I'm not accusing Mr. Cassino of doing that, but the state has looked for it, and they have found traces of lots of material. But there's 300 acres out there that you can do. And it has big industrial-sized buildings, and he has proposed over the years to do industrial scope work.
Right.
And you know, you begin to want to say, well, what... How can somebody do this? How can somebody game the system so long?
A serial polluter.
A serial polluter is a good way to look at it. And one of the things that was interesting to me is that I don't know how many recycling companies, and I really don't know how many recycling companies, have lobbying firms. Mr. Casino's Bronx County Recycling had a lobbying firm. Mm-hmm. And it's called Constantinople and... Constantinople and Vallone. And the name Vallone,
Peter Vallone,
as in Peter F. Vallone, Junior, Senior, I can't
right,
remember.
Senior. The former Speaker of the New York City Council,
and former Democratic gubernatorial candidate.
Right.
1998 was badly beaten by. Now, I am not suggesting in any way, and do we have no indication that there's anything wrong with the fact that that Peter Vallone, and I think it was a previous incarnation of his company with Mr. Constantinople, that they did anything wrong
right.
at all. They're a lobbying firm, so they may have been lobbying for...
It may well have been perfectly legal.
Yeah.
Legal for a recycling company to have a lobby.
Well, I'm sure it is legal, and I'm sure they wanted the laws changed to make it more, make it easier for dumping or whatever. I mean, let's assume like that. That would be a perfectly legitimate reason to do it. But it is interesting that to me that they would have that kind of political pull mm-hmm. to and money to hire a high power lobbying firm. Which has lots of legitimate and credible clients and a lot of credibility, I assume, based on Mr. Vallone's career.
Right.
And that's just one of the developments. As you look at it, the story becomes more and more and more complex.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was something that I just recently found. And I said, oh, all right, well, that you have to add that into what's called the mix. But right now, what is happening is that Mr. Casino may be facing sanctions by the judge, and it'll be up to John Nichols, who's a county judge but an acting state Supreme Court
right.
judge in this case, to decide what he can and can't do. And he's been pretty hard on Casino in court and in Casino's lawyer because they like to drag it on. And you can see that the judge constantly calling Mr. Casino's lawyer in the last set of hearings back on track and back on track mm-hmm. and back on track
right.
because Mr. Casino doesn't probably care. Who knows? I can't say what
right.
he does or doesn't care. But he may be able to sustain the lawyer's fees. But the town has to pay its lawyers.
Right.
And so the people of Copaic are left holding the bag in some
cases. Have you any idea what Copaic has spent so far on?
I don't know. I mean, I think there's been talk about it. Usually it's on an annual basis.
Yeah.
And so there has been some reimbursement. But
we'll check that before
yeah.
we air.
Yeah, I think so. I wish I could answer that for you. We don't.
I noticed they appoint the casino lawyer in their organizational meeting. They have their Ken Dow for their
right.
regular lawyer for most municipal problems, and they have Victor Meyer.
Right, and they need a special law firm, and that's because that firm has dealt with Casino before and has suggested a strategy that now may be approaching some sort of a watershed moment.
Mm-hmm.
Victor Meyer can talk to you about that
right.
with great knowledge, and I certainly can. But I think as frustrating as it's been to take this time, it certainly appears from my perspective as an editor and publisher to say, gee, you guys are, that makes sense. It's the weight is terrible, and the fact that he continues to dump is pretty awful, but that's the price you pay.
Now, the written pleadings are happening today, and then do you have any indication about when there might be
it's
a decision?
Total discretion of the judge.
Right, okay. Is there anything else that you'd like to get in before we wrap up?
I'm trying to think if there's anything specific, but I think that basically just understanding that this is not a poor farmer caught in the loop of regulation and being abused by the power of the state. This is somebody who has consistently told the town and the state, I am not going to follow your rules, and I am going to cost you money if you try to enforce the rules that you apply to everyone else. Mm-hmm. You can challenge the rules, and maybe that's the legitimate reason to have a lobbyist to change the rules. Right. Okay, that's fine. But once you know what the rules are, if you try to violate them or if you ignore them, then there should be sanctions. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a certain level of people wanting to have sympathy for Mr. Cassino as a beleaguered farmer.
Right.
But he's not a farmer.
It's a sham.
It's a sham, and it's somebody who's taking advantage of it and really undermining the legal system, and the people of Copaic are victims.
Is this a story about how the legal system doesn't really work?
No, I think it's a story of how the system is very tolerant up to a point, and then you have to see. I don't think you can make the judgment on the system that it doesn't work yet. I think you can make it a point that it's slow, but sometimes you have to say, well, you know, is this guy, you can't prove that he's an immediate threat to the health. This is a long-term threat. Mm-hmm. And it's destructive of the valley, because this is one of the most beautiful places in the county, which is one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen.
Right.
And for somebody to defile it in that way, not with the buildings, you say, okay, whatever his aesthetic is, that's his. But to know that those fields that were so productive have been ruined by this man is an outrage. Mm-hmm. And people should feel outraged. No sympathy for Mr. Cassino from my perspective.
Right. So if people want to learn more about this issue, they can go to the Columbia paper. Maybe you can tell people how to get to the paper and how to subscribe.
You can go to www.columbiapaper.com and you can search on the stories as well. Don't give up, because I found 43 in my search that includes the editorials, and I'm not sure that's all of them. Because we started covering this story with our second edition in April of 2009. So, you know, it's been a long time. Diane, and I say we, but Diane has written all the news stories on this. Mm-hmm. And we're really, as far as I know, the only news organization that's covering this in any way on a regular basis. And the other thing is to buy a paper. You can find it at newsstands all over, and I do mean all over Columbia County, or you can subscribe, and you just have to, you can do that right online. You can click on the little thumbnail of the front page, and it'll take you right to where you can do that.
Great.
Well,
thank you so much for joining us and for doing this and taking time out of your busy week, and we really appreciate your time.
So that was a pre-recorded interview that Deborah Gilbert and I did with Perry Teasdale, who's the editor and founder of the Columbia Paper, a local once a week paper here in Columbia County. We are joined in the studio by Victor Myers, and Victor is the attorney on this matter for the town of Copaic. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Maybe if you could just put your mic a little more direct to your mouth, like.
Okay.
So Victor, how many years have you been helping Copaic fight its legal battles against Sal Cassino?
I became involved in 2006, and that's when we commenced a lawsuit against the Cassino for his early violation. There had been a lawsuit in 2003 that was brought by the town. I wasn't involved in that, and that resulted in a settlement. But when the activity picked up there again, I was hired in 2006, so I've been involved since then.
And this must cost the town a tremendous amount of money, and none of this has been reimbursed, I guess.
Well, some of it has. It has cost them a lot of money. We had a contempt proceeding a few years ago, and under the law, the town could recover its attorney's fees for that proceeding, which eventually the town recovered. It was something over $20,000, mm-hmm. but they've spent a lot of money, and we've just gone through another to recoup their cost.
So on the recorded interview, Perry was talking about how, I guess, last Friday there were written pleadings in the case. Is that correct?
I submitted papers to the court. We had a contempt hearing that actually, because of the judge's schedule, started in July and ended in December. Wow. Not consecutively, but right. It was five different days of hearings. And the judge has asked the attorneys to submit papers of it's called proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law and a memorandum of law, which is basically what we'd like the court to find mm-hmm. as based on the evidence that was presented and to make a decision. So I've submitted my papers. The opposition casino's attorney got an extension because he was involved in a trial, but the judge has set a deadline for a casino's attorney to submit papers by February 10.
Mm-hmm. So have you ever seen anything like this before? I mean, this would seem to be, I mean, this guy's been held in contempt, I mean, ordered to remove certain things and to take down buildings and all this stuff. I mean, are you aware of anybody that has just blatantly disregarded the law in this way?
No. No, it's inexplicable, really. You know, sometimes people aren't aware of the law and they'll make a mistake. They'll do something without a permit or, you know, and they'll get a slap on the wrist and that's okay. But this is a case where we've already had four contempt proceedings and there's another one pending. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of Mr. Casino basically thumbing his nose at the town and at the court system, because there are court orders ordering him to do these things, and that's why we brought these contempt proceedings. But it really is inexplicable.
Can you comment at all on why no criminal case has been made against this man?
Well, he hasn't, to my knowledge, violated any criminal statutes. But the contempt proceeding, there are two kinds of contempt. There's a civil contempt and a criminal contempt. And that's what's pending now. Both we've asked for the court to find that the casino has committed both civil and criminal contempt, which is what the court did the first time we had contempt proceedings back in 2009, I believe, and the court found him in civil and criminal contempt, and in fact gave him a 30-day jail sentence, which the judge gave him a suspended sentence. So there's a criminal aspect of it with regard to, you know, the contempt proceeding, and he can be incarcerated.
And is that the outcome that you'd like to see in the case?
Yes. I mean, I don't think anybody's anxious to put somebody in jail, but I don't see that there's any real choice now. I mean, you can't fine him. You fine him $1,000 or $250 and make him pay attorney's fees. It's just the cost of doing business for him. The court has the ability to have him incarcerated until he complies with the court orders.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are orders from the Supreme Court that twice have been affirmed by the appellate court. And he just goes, you know, about his merry old way. So
maybe you could just clarify that for our listeners. So the contempt orders have already been appealed to the appellate division, the third judicial district,
right.
I guess, right?
The first contempt proceedings actually there were two contempt proceedings that were combined. There was a hearing, and the Judge Nichols found him in contempt, civil and criminal contempt. That was appealed, and that was affirmed by the appellate division mm-hmm. Unanimously.
Right.
We then had a trial on the basic issue, which Judge Nichols found that Casino had violated the town code in numerous instances, mm-hmm. ordered him to do certain things, to remove a steel bridge, to remove 150,000 to 200,000 cubic yards of material that he brought up from the Bronx, take down a stone wall, and also to restore the farm stand to what it had been in 2006, and also not to do any construction without getting building permits.
Right.
So he didn't follow that order, so now we brought two more contempt proceedings that were consolidated, and that's the hearings that were recently concluded.
In May of 2010, which is when he was asked to give the town its legal fees, he was charged with something that a maximum penalty involves 2 years and $75,000 fine. This is for endangering public health through operating an unpermitted landfill.
That must have been the DEC proceeding. That was not part of the town's proceeding, because the Department of Environmental Conservation has brought a number of enforcement actions, and there were two consent orders that I know about. I know he paid pretty stiff fines to the state for those violations.
So the DEC has been a plaintiff in suits against him as well.
Correct. And it's separate litigation, and my understanding, they may be ready to do something else now.
But he never had to serve any time in that suit.
No, I'm not sure that that's a penalty that can be imposed for those violations. I really don't know that. But mm-hmm.
If you could crawl into this guy's mind, like what do you think? What is he thinking? Like,
truthfully, I don't understand it. I mean, he's a successful businessman,
right?
And he doesn't seem to understand the principle that you apply for a building permit, you get a building permit, and then you build.
Right.
He just goes building without a building permit. And, it's just it's a cost of doing business for him. That's all I can imagine.
So is the case that you are working on, is that mainly focused on just the building permits, or is it also the illegal dumping that is a part of it as well?
Yes, it's on both. Yeah, okay. He as I mentioned earlier, he'd already been ordered to remove 150,000 to 200,000 cubic yards of material that he brought up from his recycling plant in the Bronx over a couple of years. Mm-hmm. The proceeding that we've just had, there was evidence that he brought in another almost 10,000 cubic yards in 2013.
And this is a huge amount of material. I mean, that's, to just picture it is very difficult, because it's just a tremendous amount of dumping.
Right. There was testimony at the trial, and we had subpoenaed two of the drivers who brought the material up. They were making two trips every day back and forth to the Bronx. The tractor trailers, each one carried 3,000 cubic yards.
Right.
Let me get that. Yeah, no, I think it was 3,000 cubic yards. And there was a dump truck also. And this had gone on for about 5 months.
Wow.
So, it's a lot of material.
And in a formerly pristine location. I mean, this was a farm for hundreds of years, I guess.
Yeah. I'm sorry, there was 30 cubic yards. Sorry. I get my zeros mixed. Yeah.
Right. So a typical dumpster size.
Yeah. So he was bringing up, and there was also a smaller truck. They were bringing up, it would be 80,000. I'm sorry, 8,000 cubic yards, 800 cubic yards.
It's such a large amount of material that you can't even wrap your head around it, or even the mathematics of it. Yeah. It's a tremendous amount of material that's been dumped on this property.
How is that being documented? Does the building inspector take photographs?
Well, yes, when he can, but he's not there every day. The 150,000 cubic yards was from Casino's own records, his own testimony that's what he had brought up. The recent, the 9,600 yards that he brought up in 2013 was basically documented by from records that DEC obtained. We had, at the hearing, we had a DEC investigator testify as to how much was brought up. But that came from records from the place that he got the material from. So that's how we know. But, the building inspector, he's got other things to do. He's not a full-time building inspector for the town.
Sure.
And there are other, people, applying for permits. And so he can't be there every day. But, he's doing as best he can.
I know someone from the DEC was also on the site watching and doing some documentation.
Yeah, the DEC goes back and forth. They're also, busy agency, but they've, they seem to be active again because he's a thorn in their side. It's the same thing for the town. He just, doesn't want to do what he's ordered to do.
And is the Attorney General's office involved in this at all?
Yeah, the Attorney General represents DEC in these proceedings.
Okay.
And I've had a lot of contact with the Assistant Attorney General, who's been involved in this matter. So we kind of touch base with one another.
So you say that the amounts were in his own records, but he keeps records about the illegal dumping on this property because, I mean, because the property is not zoned or approved to be a dump, I guess, right?
Well, let's correct it. The material that he brought up, nobody has found, because DEC has investigated, that it was hazardous under their regulations.
Right.
And, you know, if he had had a permit, it's possible he could have been permitted to bring this up because he was spreading it on his farm.
Right.
So it could be considered a legitimate purpose. But he refused to get a permit, as he's done again. And he's under the town code, and the definition of when you need a permit includes bringing in fill, even if you're a farmer.
Right.
And I understand it's some of the fill he dumped, it was pulverized, and that's against the rules, right?
That violated the DEC order. He was charged, it was a criminal proceeding in Albany County for misfiling papers. You know, and again, the town was not involved. I was not involved in that proceeding. But as part of it, he entered into a plea. I think he might have pled to a felony, but there was an order that told him, you know, what he could bring up and what he could not bring up. And everything that he could bring up under that order had to be recognizable. And pulverized material is not recognizable. So he was bringing up material that was not recognizable. And also, I think it was also considered, or may be considered, solid waste under their regulations, which was also prohibited. And that DEC has notified him of these violations, and there was testimony at my trial because I had a DEC investigator there that's what he brought up. So I believe the Attorney General is now acting on that.
What do you think of Mr. Cassino's claims that he's a farmer engaged in composting operations and his use of the term hay barn for the 14,000 plus structure he constructed?
Well, I think when he started this, I wouldn't consider him being a farmer because I think his original intention was that he was going to use the property to deposit a lot of this material from the Bronx and maybe end up doing farming. And he was also bringing trucks in. It's a long story, but he had submitted plans to the Copaic Planning Board to construct a huge barn. And the plans that were submitted actually showed the interior that they were truck-based. They actually had, you know, drawings of trucks in it. And that's why we think he built this, you know, steel bridge over the Nosticill Creek that would support this heavy trucking. So, you know, now I don't know. He's had to divest himself of the recycling business in the Bronx. He has other business interests. And, you know, maybe now he wants to be a farmer. It was a farm when he bought it, and after he bought it, he leased out the fields to other farmers, and he's had his own people now, you know, raising crops, you know, hay or corn, and I think he's got a few cows there. Maybe that's what he wants to do. You know, he could become a legitimate farmer, but maybe now it's a definition. You know, under the agricultural markets law, maybe he would qualify as a farmer.
But there's a good chance that this is just a smokescreen in order to have another layer of protection. Is that?
It might be. I'm not sure. You know, how it started out may have been one thing. I mean, he deposited all this material on his farm. I think there's a. There may have been an issue of getting how to get rid of it from the Bronx, and this was a place to deposit it.
So, ideally, how do you see it going? And do you have an idea of like what the timetable is with the judge's decision?
Ideally, we want him to do what he's been ordered to do.
Right.
You know, among other things. You know, it shows contempt for the town code. Everybody else has to, you know, obey the code, and it subverts the ability of the town to enforce its own laws. Mm-hmm. So we want him to be ordered to do what he was supposed to do. And if the only way to do that is that he's incarcerated until he complies, you know, so be it. You know, he's made his bed, now he has to lie in it. Mm-hmm. I hope the judge will, act swiftly. We've submitted papers, and they're waiting for the casino's attorney to submit papers. And, you know, there's a lot to mull over, but I'm hopeful, and, you know, I believe the judge will do what's right.
Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about this case that maybe we haven't covered?
Yeah, if you want to build something in the town of Copac, apply for a building permit, get a permit, and then construct it, and you'll be okay.
Right.
Is the legal system working in this case?
Absolutely. You know, sometimes the wheels of justice grind slowly, but I think now, you know, we're and I tell people when they ask me that question, what's taken so long? I say, well, would you rather have be in Russia under their right. court system? And it's taken a long time for a lot of reasons, appeals and court schedules and attorney schedules and everything else. But, yeah, I think the justice system is working here.
Okay.
So we've been with Victor Myers, who is the attorney on this case with Sal Casino in the town of Copac. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
And we're going to take a quick break, and we will be joined by former town councilman from Copac, Bob Sachs. We'll be right back. This is At Issue on WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
Go. This is Nicholas Cristiano from Athens. You are listening to WGXC Hands-On Radio for Greene County and Columbia County.
The views expressed by volunteer on-air hosts do not represent or reflect the views of WGXC. WGXC is nonpartisan and does not endorse or support political candidates. To participate in WGXC's on-air dialogue, call 518-828-0290 or email info@wgxc.org.
Good morning. Bob, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, great.
Hi, Bob.
That was easy.
Hi,
thank
Deborah.
You so much, Katie.
Victor.
So thanks for joining us. You've been listening to the stream as while we were in?
I have.
Great. So you know what we've been talking about here. And maybe you could give our listeners a little bit of background about your role in the town of Copac and what's up with you now. And then we could talk a little bit about the case.
And, Bob, has this been a nightmare for the town board?
Oh, absolutely. Several town boards, because this goes back to 1999 when Angelo Valentino was supervisor. So we've been doing our best to protect the town and the citizens for quite some time. And I'd like to take issue, I guess, with both of your previous guests who somehow think that the justice system is working. I don't see it that way at all. It hasn't worked for Copac. Victor's comment that justice takes time. In this case, I think there's too much time gone by. When the Attorney General of New York calls a gentleman a serial polluter, we need more expeditious service than we've been getting.
Mm-hmm. So you maybe you could tell. I just want to give people the background about who you are and your role. So you were a former town board member, and maybe you could tell us the terms that you served and when you departed.
I got elected in 2006, the election of 2005, starting in 2006. I'm a two-term elected town councilman. The entire time I've been on the board, one of the projects that were foremost for our attention was Salvatore Casino.
Mm-hmm.
How much did you budget each year for legal costs just for this issue?
I don't have a recollection of how much we budgeted each year. It could have been, I don't even want to tell you that number, because it varied. I think some years it was $50,000, some years it was $30,000. A few years ago, I think we had achieved somewhere in the range of a $140,000 or $150,000 investment in justice. So far, that investment hasn't paid off.
Wow. That's a nightmare for a small town.
Yes, it is. We don't, want to do it. We don't have the funds to do it. There are extremely other important places to spend the money for the town's future.
Did that mean you had to raise taxes?
No. It means we had to take away funds from other areas of government. No, I don't believe we raised taxes for this.
And do you think that's part of the plan? I mean, it's hard to get inside somebody's mind, especially, I mean, this is fairly, this is somebody who, nobody could really understand his motivation and the wherewithal to do this. But I mean, do you believe that going to these small towns that don't have a lot of resources and doing this type of thing, do you think that's part of the plan?
Yes, absolutely. Not only that towns have small budgets, but I must compliment COPEG. Many towns don't have the political will to do what is right.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's been excellent that COPEG has found a collection of people, not myself, but a series of town boards who have sought it through.
Right.
Not yet to the bitter end, but they have persevered and pursued.
Right. And this is, I mean, and it's been really on both sides of the aisle, and in general, people, the elected officials in COPEG seem united in trying to end this, I guess.
Yes, we are right there at, I guess the word is ground zero. Mm-hmm. We see the trucks coming in, and there's, you know, great fear about the town's water.
Right.
What if?
Right.
We don't know.
I mean, I would assume as well as the air, because friable asbestos is a breathing hazard. And is that something that has been looked at before?
Do people talk about that?
Constantly.
Uh-huh.
I believe there was a report and that there might have been friable asbestos there. And as Victor Meyer said, it's 300 acres. You got to dig in the right spot.
Right.
And nobody knows where that right spot is.
And have you been following? You've been following. I'm sure the lead up now, the arguments and everything before Judge Nichols. Do you have any sense of where this is going and how it'll turn out?
No, I'm concerned that history might repeat itself,
mm-hmm.
As it has in other places, and there'll be a zero conclusion. And zero, what I would interpret as justice performed.
Right.
Are you happy with the way the DA has handled this case to date?
The DA as far as like a criminal case?
Like,
you mean?
I read in an article that Beth Cozzolino suggested that COPEG undertake its own private investigation.
I passed a resolution at the town board requesting that Beth Cozzolino, our district attorney, pursue
at the time right
when we could not. She came back and said something along the lines that she doesn't have the authority and COPEG would have to do its own investigative work. That's ducking the ball.
Right. Do you personally believe that he could have been found guilty on the criminal charges?
I'm not a lawyer,
right?
You know, and I followed the advice of counsel. We pursued a different path. We didn't pursue criminal
right.
charges. Victor sort of explained that in his conversation with you. When you hire a consultant, it's best to do what the consultant says if you have no knowledge on the subject.
Right, right. What else can you tell us about the case that maybe we haven't covered? Is there anything that we've missed?
It's not that you missed it, but I think somehow everybody seems to ignore the bigger picture, because it's not just COPEG. It's, as Attorney General Cuomo said, he's a serial polluter.
Mm-hmm.
Waterbury, Connecticut, Dover Plains, Claremont, COPEG, and other areas that we may not be aware of.
Right.
So there's a pattern here.
Do you think that maybe the state or the federal government should have more rigorous oversight over people who pollute in numerous places like this?
You know, sometimes you go through a red light and for one reason or another, you get thrown in jail. Or you beat your wife, or there, I mean, there's many cases where people are incarcerated for much smaller problems mm-hmm. than has been created in all these towns.
Right.
So, like, who's protecting the people here? And my conclusion is so far, slow justice, okay? Is that protecting the people?
Right.
Not so sure.
I mean, the potential here is, like, I mean, this could easily be, you know, a Superfund site, I guess. I mean, there is that kind of potential for the amounts of dumping that's gone on here. I mean, this could be millions and millions and millions of dollars to clean up this property if it is found to be hazardous. Is that your reading of it?
Yes. I think 20 years from now, we'll recognize the error of our ways
right.
and the lack of expeditious service to the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what we're going to find. And depending upon where it's fallen, what can you do 20 years from now if it's already in the water table?
Right.
You cannot clean that up.
As we speak, the dumping is ongoing. Is that right?
I haven't been there in some time, so I have to say I don't know. I've heard, yes, but I don't know that as a fact.
Right. Is there anything else? First of all, I want to say thank you for phoning in and for your continued involvement in the case. Is there anything that you wanted to just get to our listeners before we sign off with you?
I would encourage your listening audience to pay attention not only what's happening in Copaig, but in their own towns, and raise their voices up and have the justice system perform to our expectations.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, we've been with former town councilman Bob Sachs from the town of Copaig. Thanks again for joining us, and this is At Issue on WGXC. Thanks, Bob.
Great hearing from you.
Thank you. Yes, well, pleasure.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. So we have about a minute, or a couple of minutes anyway. This is a very complex case, and it's something that we've been... in the past week, Deborah and I have sort of been trying to wrap our heads around. I think we've really only scratched the surface, but I think people should definitely be watching to see what Judge Nichols does on this matter. It seems like in the next few weeks that we'll be hearing something. So is there any thoughts? That you
Bob makes
about?
A valuable point. We're in a democracy, but it's only as good as the involved electorate. And so pay attention, watch this case as it unfolds, and if you don't like the results or you're skeptical or impatient, write letters to the press,
mm-hmm.
you know, call in, post things online,
yep.
participate.
One thing that I haven't mentioned in a few weeks is that we have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/@issue. We post notices of who will be our upcoming guests, and we also post the archives of shows, so you can go back and listen to something that you may have missed. So please check out our Facebook page and like it. It's at facebook.com/@issue, spelled out. We also have a Twitter feed. It's @issue, and that's also spelled out. And any other news coming up that we want to let our listeners in about?
I think the Columbia paper and Diane Belden should be commended for covering this case over such a long period of time. This is community journalism at its best. And Perry Teasdale told us when we interviewed him that Diane has received some awards for her work
mm-hmm.
Of doing this in-depth coverage. And it's just heroic, I think.
Just for full disclosure, you are a sometimes reporter for the Columbia paper as well.
That's true.
But clearly, the paper has done an amazing job at covering this, and they have been relentless at making sure that the issue doesn't just disappear into the background, because it really is a huge problem. I mean, this, you know, serial polluter amongst us in our county that has no regard for the law or for